Hi, my name is Ann, and I'm an alcoholic. And it's good to be in the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd like to welcome all the new people here tonight, especially the newcomers, and especially those who are here for the first year at a conference here in Sacramento. I'd like to thank Linda for inviting me here. Yeah, we really had a hard time. We played a lot of phone tag. I'd like to thank Liz for picking me up. I've known Liz since she was 8 years old. I didn't know I'd run into her in Alcoholics Anonymous some years later. And Barbara, a friend of mine. I have some people here that I've known. And it's so good to see Mary Pearl. God, I cried Mary Pearl's boobs down in Arkansas some years ago. Just laid my head right in between her chest and just cried. And I said, oh, my God. In Hot Springs, Arkansas, I got myself into a deal down there some years ago. And I got out of it. Thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous. I got my daughter here tonight, my oldest daughter. And I love very, very, very much. She was 27 months old when her mama got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. And she's a mother today herself. She's got the most gorgeous little grandson you ever want to see. And it's so true. If I had to know it was so good to be a grandmother, I would have done it first. The little boy has touched places in my heart that nobody else has ever touched, not even my own children. And she's going to make me a granny again. And so I get to come up here and I get to spend some time with her. And I get to spend some time with you in Alcoholics Anonymous. I spoke here 5 years ago, and I came here, it was 10 years before that. I think it was for the 15th. I am so grateful to be part of this fellowship. I've been a lot of stuff going on in my life. I got sober. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was 23 years of age when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and kind of looked around Alcoholics Anonymous at that time, and everybody was very old. I mean, they were old. They were 35 and older. And I kind of graduated from Alcoholics Anonymous. I felt really bad for you people. I thought, my God, you know, I was until I was 40 years of age. I'm 40 and some now, and I like sitting in those hard chairs. I like to tell you how long I'm sober because Norm Alpe, one of my favorite speakers, he was one of my idols, and I think everybody has their idols, but he was mine, and Norm is gone. He's been gone for many years. And Norm always told you how long he was sober, and the reason why he told you how long he was sober is because he said that one day you might get a pension plan going here, and he wanted to get his full benefits. You know, there's a lot of changes in Alcoholics Anonymous, and one day you might just get a pension plan going here, and I want my full benefit. I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been sober since on June 16th, 1968. I celebrated 28 years last June. By the grace of God and the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, I've stayed, and that's the miracle for me. I've stayed here. I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous. I weighed 85 pounds. I was malnutritious, and my liver was shot. Kaiser has always been very fascinated with my liver, the more I kind of look into my liver, it's part of the immune system, I can understand why I have what I have today. A few years ago, about 9 years ago, I had some tests done, and I never had insurance, so I got insurance with Kaiser, and I went and got a physical, and they did all these tests, and I went into the doctor, and she looked at me, and they never mentioned anything about alcoholism. You didn't fill out any forms, and I'm not ashamed to be an alcoholic. I love being an alcoholic. It's got a nice ring to it, you know, just to be, you know, kind of sounds like a doctor, you know, compared to some of the names that I used to be called when I was out there drinking, you know. Being an alcoholic is no problem. I just didn't think anything about it, and so the doctor came in, and she's looking at me, and she said, we're very, very concerned about your liver. And I said, oh, really? And I said, what's wrong with my liver? She said, well, you know, this only occurs, she said, in people who are hard drinkers or heavy alcoholics. And I looked at her and I said, I don't drink. I haven't had a drink in so many, many years. And and immediately, you know, so she looked at me, red right in the eye, and she said, do you know that if you drink, you'll die? And I looked at her and I said, no shit. What an amazing piece of information that they would give me after 20-some-odd years, that if I drink, I will die. And believe me, I know today that if I drink, I will die. And I won't die in a few hours. It'll be a long, slow suicide. Because the longer I stay here in Alcoholics Anonymous, the more I know that I've got this yellow streak in my back, and it grows with each year. Because as I stand up here before you tonight, my disease is progressing. I have a daily reprieve contingent on my spiritual maintenance, nothing more and nothing less. There is not anybody in this room that could relieve me of my alcoholism. It tells me that in chapter 5. No human power could relieve us of our alcoholism, but God could and would if he was sought. And so that tells me that I must seek God on a daily basis. And believe me, I didn't understand any of that when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I came here, like I said, I was 24 years of age and I was tired. I was jaded tired. I was very tired. I'm not a has-been and never was when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I ended up over at the old Anaheim Club over in the gal that had made the 12-step calling me the first time. She was a school teacher and she's still sober and a member of Alcoholics Anonymous and still active. And when I got ready in that 8 months, she would call me in that 8 months. Her name was Carolyn, and she would call me up, and she'd say, how are you doing? And I would very quickly tell her how much I was drinking. She'd say, I'm not interested in your drinking, Annie. I want to be your friend. And God, I longed for a friend, and I needed a friend, but I didn't want to be her friend, because if I was her friend, it meant that I have to come to these lousy AA meetings, and I didn't want to be an alcoholic. So I get off the phone, I think, yeah, I bet she wants to be my friend. And so I got one of those brainstorms that talks about in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. I decided that what it was a recruiting thing. I would recruit somebody for you and get you off my case. You know? So I had some old friends from down Anaheim Street in Long Beach, and I called Eileen up. And I said, Eileen, you're an alcoholic, and you ought to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And she said, okay. You know? And I called this other gal up and the gal back, and I said, I found somebody for you. And she said, good, I'll come and get both of you. That was not part of the plan, you know, for her to come and get both of us. I just wanted her to take Eileen and leave me alone. And she came and got both of us that night and took us over to the old Anaheim Club in Anaheim. And after the meeting, another gal come up to me after the meeting. Her name was Sue M. And Sue looked at me and she said, Annie, when are you coming back? And I said, I'm not an alcoholic. She is. Look at her. You know, very, very quick to point the finger at somebody else. And I left that meeting that night, and I continued to drink. And every time I picked up a drink from that time on, I would hear that woman say, when are you coming back? And I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous 8 months later, and alcohol had taken its toll on me. I had nothing to return to. And I got involved. I went back to that club on a Sunday morning on June 16th, and I sat in my hand. And I was the type of drunk, I puked, and I puked till a boil came off my stomach. And then I held my nose until I drank it to go back down at 10 o'clock in the morning, because I had to have that cure. And I had to have that, because that was the thing that kept me from shaking. And I went in that meeting on that Sunday morning, and a man told me what I suffered from. And he told me that I had an allergy to the body, coupled with an obsession to the mind. And he told me that I could get sober and I could stay sober the same way I drank. And I was a daily drinker and a periodic drunk. I drank every day, but I didn't get drunk every day. I couldn't guarantee would I get drunk on Monday or Friday or whatever. I was always going to, I got drunk within that week. I was drunk. And I left that meeting and I wanted to drink more than anything in my life. I wanted to drink. But I heard the man say, if you don't take the first drink, you won't get drunk. And I went to another meeting. And when I got sober, there was 147 meetings in Orange County. That was all it was in Orange County. I didn't drive a car. And, you know, I hear people that today that come in and they got driver's license been taken away from them. And I know that Alcoholics Anonymous has changed tremendously. And I never had a problem getting to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. In fact, they used to call me up and say, be on the porch ready. And I'd say, but I don't want to go. And I couldn't even get that out of my mouth. And I'd have to be on the porch ready to go. So they came and picked me up. You didn't get to say, no, I don't want to go to a meeting. They were there, right, and they picked you up. And I never had a problem getting to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I learned real early in my sobriety that we come in here and we're loaded with guilt. Loaded. Guilty to be guilty. And they used to give us a list of names, and I knew who was sober maybe a few days longer than me or maybe a few days less than me. And I would call them up and I'd say, if you don't come and pick me up and I die from this disease, it's going to be your fault. Boy, I tell you, they come running over there, I had no problem. You don't do that with old timers, because those old timers somewhere along the line to work these steps, and they get rid of that guilt, and they will tell you to ride your bike, take a bus, or walk. So I never had a problem getting a meeting to Alcoholics Anonymous or getting home from a meeting. I'd be truly grateful to the people that I got sober with. I got sober at a group of people in Huntington Beach on a Friday night called the Lennox Group, and there was a group of people in there. Debbie remembers those. And there was a group of people in there that were absolutely talked about the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and talked about the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they talked about cleaning house. And I want you to know I had one of the cleanest houses in Westminster until they found out what I was doing, and they said that was not the kind of house cleaning they had in mind for me. The kind of house cleaning they had in mind for me was an inside job. I'd like to tell you that I came in here and I surrendered, and everything has been wonderful. They used to call me Crazy Annie when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and they didn't say that behind my back. They said it right to my face. And I upset a lot of meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous for a long time. When I was new, they took me to Schizophrenics Anonymous. They didn't know what to do with me. I was so crazy. And I walked around my first year of sobriety. I gave everybody the finger, and I cussed you up one side and down the other. My vocabulary, they've got a sign that says that profanity is something to your serenity, and I could not put a sentence together without using four-letter words. And when I am emotionally disturbed today, I use four-letter words, and people don't like it, but I know that's me. That's when my emotions are not in sync, or there's something not quite right within inside of me. And they kept telling me to keep coming back, and I was so disappointed when I found out they were telling everybody in Alcoholics Anonymous to keep coming back. And they talked about these steps, and they talked about that fourth step. And there was a guy in my home group. I got a sponsor right away, and I met Lois, and her husband's name was John Brown. And John was one of these great big guys, one of those AAs. I think every group has one that likes to get in your face. You know those ones? They're always getting in your face, you know. And one night after the Friday night meeting, he came up to me and he said, "Hey, kid, have you done the fourth and fifth step? You're going to have a birthday pretty soon, aren't you?" And they always used to say in those days, if you don't do the fourth and fifth step, you're not a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. You become a member of Alcoholics Anonymous after you do the fourth and fifth step. And I said, "I'm not doing the fourth and fifth step. That's for those of you who drank for 15 or 20 years. I only drank for 10 years. I'm not as sick as those who drank for 15 or 20 years. And he looked at me and he said, "Hey, kid," he said, "if you don't do that fourth and fifth step," he said, "I'm going to get up at the podium and I'm going to tell them not to listen to you, that you're not working the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous." And I got scared. He scared the hell out of me. And I went home that night and I thought, well, I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to get in the bathtub and I'm going to drown myself. Now, I'm not a suicidal person. I'm more apt to kill you than I am to kill myself. You know, and if I mention suicide, it's usually I'm going to jump off the curb, right? But I just don't, not going to do that fourth step or do that writing. They want me to do all this writing, and I can't write in the first place, and I can't tell them I can't write. So I thought, I'll just get in the bathtub, and I'll slide down in the bathtub, and I'll just drown myself. That'll be the answer. I mean, that's real sick thinking, don't you think? And all of a sudden, I remember them reading chapter 5, and it says, grave emotional mental disorders. And I kind of slid back up, and I thought, oh, my God, they'll go around AA and they say, that's what's wrong with Annie. She had grave emotional and mental disorders. And I thought, they're not going to say that about me. So I went out this thrifty drug, and I picked up all this stuff for my sponsor, and I got over to her house, and I sat down at her kitchen table, and I put all this paper and pencils in front of her, and she said, "What's this for?" And I said, "I'm going to tell you all about it. Start writing." And she kind of looked at me and she said, "Honey," she said, "I did my inventory." And I said, "Now you get to do mine." And so we argued. And the only emotion I knew when I got here, I was very angry. And I argued a lot. And she wouldn't do it. And that was the beginning of me learning to do for me. And I ran out of that house that night. And someone came and picked me up. And I would call her for the next couple of months. And all she'd say was, "Right, right, right, right." And I would hang up the phone. And I was a great pacer. I loved to pace. I used to carry the big book under my arm, and I'd pace back and forth. I thought it was all going to go up into my arm and into my head, and I was going to get all this wonderful knowledge. And I had a lot of secrets. And they tell me I'm as sick as my secrets. And I was going to take this one secret to the grave. And I couldn't read and I couldn't write when I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And believe me, it's got absolutely nothing to do with my disease of alcoholism. It's got to do with where I came from, the setting I came from, and what was wrong with me, and because nobody knew and nobody really cared. And I am truly grateful that alcoholism does not choose its victims. It really doesn't care if you have an education or you don't have an education, you're overeducated or you're undereducated. If you have the disease of alcoholism, you have the disease of alcoholism. It's just that simple. And there was a gal named Mary Jane, who was a special ed teacher, and we were up at a picnic up in Irvine for the central office, and Mary Jane kind of was sitting with me, and she was talking to me, and Audrey was a little baby then, and I was kind of very twitchy and very frustrated, and she picked up on it, and this other gal had made a 12-step call on me. Her name was, she was also a teacher, Carolyn. And between those two ladies, they took me to some psychiatrists out there in Orange who were in the educational field, and they tested me, and they found out what I had a thing was called dyslexia. and I'd seen everything backwards, and because I came from Ireland and they really didn't know, and I came from a large family, and I don't blame my people for any of this. I was getting ready to go work at a factory, and that's what I was going to do for the rest of my life anyway. Yeah, but my higher power saw fit that I should be doing something else. And they told me that I wasn't wired right. Can you believe that? And I thought, you know, I've known all my life that I wasn't wired right. I didn't need no psychiatrist to tell me I wasn't wired right. I've known that all my life. And they told me about I do my story backwards, and I see things backwards, and I do know how to read, and I do know how to write today. I don't like to write, but I do read a lot. And I did graduate from high school, and I did get a driver's license. And those are all the things that I got here in Alcoholics Anonymous. I got with the help of a lot of people here. And my sponsor, when I was 5 years sober, took me to school. And I stood outside when I tell you that my life began 28 years ago here in Alcoholics Anonymous, my life began 28 years ago here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And she took me over to that school, and I said, will you come in with me? And she said, no, but I'll be right out here waiting for you, and you come out. And then she was right out there waiting for me when I came out. And that's the way my life has been. It's always been that you've always been right there waiting for me or taking me somewhere. You know, I am going to these steps, and I don't blame any people today, but I came in here at a lot of resentment and a lot of my restless spirit and a lot of hate. I lived on hate. And I blamed everybody. I was a great blamer. And if you listen to what I tell you tonight, I don't blame people today, but this is how I saw it, my perception of things. And they tell me alcoholism is a disease of the perception, and my perception of things was very distorted. I'm Irish and I'm Catholic, and that gave me two strikes against me right off the bat. And I'm not one of those Irish that's never seen the skies of Ireland. There's a few of them sitting out there tonight, so beware, you know. There's some from Dublin and some from Mayo, and I got to talk to a couple of them earlier, and they've got the brogues just like they got off the bloody boat. And And it's kind of nice to be with, you know, because, you know, alcoholism is very high in Ireland. But I'm one of those that I did see the skies of Ireland. I lived there for 17 and a half years of my life, and my family was all over there, and they still are. And I was the eighth child out of 10, and there was a lot of, my father was an alcoholic, and I also know that I'm not supposed to label anybody an alcoholic. I was raised in the school of Alcoholics Anonymous, that you don't label somebody else. But my father drank, and there was a lot of commotion that went on in that household. And when my father drank, and he would come home on a Friday night, and my mother, the only wrong thing my mother ever did was she had too many kids and didn't know what to do with us. And he'd come home on a Friday night, and he would pull her out of bed, and there was all the screaming, and all this stuff would go on. And it talks about that fear that goes through all of the everything in our lives, and it takes so much from us. I was born with tremendous, tremendous fears, absolutely terrified all my life. And they would start fighting, and as a young child, I'd be up there in that bed, and I'd put the pillow over my head, and I would pray to that God that I was so terrified of, but I prayed to him anyway, and I'd say, please let him kill her, or maybe she'll kill him, or maybe I would die. And I got up the next morning and all these things going on inside of me, and I never knew how to label them until I came to you, and what they were was guilt, remorse, and I was a very, very bad child for thinking all these bad things of my parents. I went to Catholic school not because we're rich, simply because that's all there is in the part of Ireland I came from. And people used to say to me, how come you didn't get an education if you went to Catholic school? And I used to say I had frustrated Irish nuns. You know? I remember sitting with psychiatrists and telling them about some of the things that happened to me as a young child with these nuns. And I remember, and I'd have them cry, and I remember sitting with Mary Reagan some years later in my sobriety telling Mary about these horrible things that happened to me. And Mary looked at me and she said, honey, you really had it bad. She said, you know, I had German nuns, and they were trained by Hitler. So the moral of that story is there's always going to be someone who's going to have it just a little bit worse than you here at Alcoholics Anonymous. I got one of those brainstorms in second grade. I decided that I was so tired of this nun every morning. We had catechism, and we had a very, very small house, and there was 12 people in this little small house, and there was a lot of high anxiety in this little house, and there was 6 boys and 4 girls, and there was a lot of fighting. I spent most of my time hiding in the coal hole under the stairs, so that they wouldn't know that I was there, because I was terrified, because my mother would go down through all the names looking for one of the kids, and then, you know, if you were standing right in front of her, you got it. And you could, I had to memorize the catechism, and I couldn't memorize the catechism, so I would going to school, and I decided I was going to get Sister this morning because she asked me to catechism, and I couldn't remember it, and I got scared, and I shut off, and that's part of dyslexia. You get terrified, and everything just goes. It's gone. And I couldn't tell her, and she grabbed a hold of me, and she pulled me out of the chair, and I up and slapped her as hard as any little second grader can hit somebody across the face. And the Mother Superior was teaching in the next room. There was last petition in that room, and she just happened to turn her head, and she just happened to see me do it. She came flying into that room, and just it was the nuns, the presentation nuns. They wore those big veils with the white things, you know, the big long with the rosary beads and the whole nine yards. And she grabbed a hold of me, and she shook me like a little puppy dog. And I stood there in front of Mother Superior and this nun and all these kids and said, I didn't do it. I didn't do this. Now, I was to do that until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't matter what I got caught doing, I would stand and look at you and say, it wasn't me. I could not take responsibility for my actions or my behavior. It was always your fault or somebody else's fault. And they took me out of there to move to another grade, and I was to kneel in front of these two statues, and I always say 3 weeks, if probably was a week, but it felt like 3 weeks. And I assumed I was supposed to pray, and I got tired of kneeling on these hardwood floors. And I went back up to this classroom to apologize, because they want me to apologize to the class, and she's got this round pointer, and she's sticking in my back. And I lowered my eyes, and she wants me to say, I'm sorry, and she wants me to say it out loud. And I said, I'm sorry. And something else happened inside of me, and what happened inside of me was you against me, and it was always you against me from that time on. I spent most of the time outside the door with in Dunce's Corners with big hats, those round cones used to do with a big D on it because they call me a dunce. I am not a stupid woman, believe me. I'm an alcoholic, but I'm not stupid. And I spent most of that time outside the door, and by the time I was 12 and a half years of age, I left school, and I was 13, and I start working in a factory. And I had all those hopes and dreams that every other girl had. I was going to find me a nice Irish fella and get married and have children. And I'm truly, truly grateful God does not answer stupid prayers. I really believe that if I had to marry somebody from Ireland, I'd probably be an RD in the asylum by now, locked up. I'd be dead. They would have killed me, for sure. Yeah, I found boys and I found alcohol all in the same week. And my first drink was at the Abbey Ballroom. And if you know anything about my culture, you don't have to be any age in order to drink. I think they've changed that law today. But if you know how to name it, they will serve it to you. And I was at the dance, and this guy had a half bottle of cognac, and he told me that if I drank this half bottle of cognac down, he would give me a pound note, which was equivalent to $3 in your money at that time. And the deal was I was to drink this half bottle of cognac down, and I wasn't to stop. And I drank that half bottle of cognac down, and I didn't stop. And I went into the bathroom, and I threw up, and I got very sick. And I came back out, and I said, give me my money. And I took that money, and I went up to the bar, and I ordered me another drink. I didn't know that that $3 that I got, I sold my soul. I sold my soul for a long time, because I'm one of those here in Alcoholics Anonymous that believes that I suffer from a soul sickness. And when I get sick in Alcoholics Anonymous, and my spirit gets sick, is because I move, not God. God doesn't move. And my soul gets sick again, and I have to come to you. And I come to you for all the healings, because this is where I get my soul gets healed, is here with you in Alcoholics Anonymous. I can tell you exactly what that drink did for me that night. That knot from the time I was 6 years of age and the pit of my gut was gone. And it didn't matter whether my father beat or my mother. It didn't matter whether there was no food in that house. It didn't matter whether I had no education. I found the secret to live in. Now, I didn't drink every day from that time on, but I drank at every opportunity from that time on. By the time I was 17 years of age, my father made a decision for me. I had absolutely nothing to do with this decision. He decided I should come to California. The streets were paved with gold. I've been here over 35 years, and I'm still looking for those bloody streets paved with gold. I'd never been anywhere. As far as I ever got in Ireland was Dublin to the zoo, and all of a sudden he's sending me to the other ends of the earth. At that time, that was in 1961, I really still believed that you guys were living in covered wagons, you know, and horses and all that kind of stuff, and that's why I was coming out here to the west. And my aunt took me up to Dublin and filled out all these papers of my sister. I'd come here, and she kind of came here after they had a little Donnybrook at the house, and kind of took a chance and left, you know. I mean, we really are very brave people. And She filled all these papers and got me ready to come to this country. And I remember asking my dad at this time if he'd let me go to England. I had some brothers running through England, and he said, no, the Queen of England has screwed up that half of the family, and by God, she ain't going to screw up this half of the family. And I often wondered who he blamed for me, you know. I'm sure somebody got it. And I remember being up at Dublin. I remember getting on that plane, and I was drinking champagne, and I remember the feeling. The feeling was freedom. I wanted to be free. I wanted to be free more than anything in my life. I wanted to be free, but it was a false feeling of freedom behind alcohol. And I was never to feel that feeling again until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And it didn't happen for me on my first 90 days. My freedom has come very slow here in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I came and I lived with a family up in Palos Verdes for the next couple of years, and I was very impressed with this family. They had a beautiful home, and she had a beautiful bar, and she used to drink 180-proof vodka, and I used to drink 180-proof vodka, and I'd fill a bottle up of water, and then she couldn't understand how come she couldn't get a buzz on while she was drinking that good water, you know. These were people I did go back, and I did make an amends to, and these were people who were very grateful that I had found the fellowship called Alcoholics Anonymous. This woman wanted me to go to school, and I couldn't tell her that I couldn't read, and I couldn't write, and I couldn't tell her that I did numbers wrong, and she didn't get all her phone messages, and when I drank, I used to break out. I was highly allergic to alcohol. I used to break out in welts all over my body when I'd really get on a tooth, and I shook a lot, and I was shaking before I got up here tonight, and it's a different kind of shaking, but I used to shake a lot, just absolutely terror. And I was terrified that not just from drinking, but shaking from the drinking, but just not that anybody would find out something about me. You know, my life is an open book, and that's a gift here at Alcoholics Anonymous. I have no secrets today. You want to know anything about me, you just ask, and I will be glad to tell you. If I feel that you need to know. This woman took me down Redondo Beach High, and she wanted me to go to school. And I couldn't tell her. I couldn't be with my peers, and I couldn't go into that office, and I could not fill out those papers. And standing outside that door, and I kind of slid down that door. And today I can tell you what I was experiencing. I was going into a catatonic state of mind with absolute sheer fear that somebody would find out something about me. And that woman said I didn't have to do that, and I didn't have to do it. And I started running around Redondo Beach Pier, and running around. A lot of people use a lot of hard drugs, and this is in the 60s. And I got nothing against those of you who come into Alcoholics Anonymous and have used drugs. I am really grateful that I didn't get involved in drugs. And the only reason I didn't get involved in drugs is because I was absolutely totally terrified that if I was caught, I would be deported back to Ireland. And my father would meet me at Dublin Airport, and he'd kill me first and ask questions later. My dad was very violent, and I understand why today he was so violent. There was a lot of stuff that he missed as a young man himself. And my dad had caught me smoking cigarettes when I was 10 years of age. My grandmother turned me on to cigarettes. When I tell you I have nowhere to go back in my life, I don't. I started smoking. My grandmother was an invalid, and I used to go to her house, and I wouldn't give her the bedpan unless she gave me a cigarette. So then she decided to teach me how to inhale, right? So that's the kind of kid I was. And my dad caught me smoking, and I got that cigarette hanging in my mouth. And if you ever ate a cigarette, well, I ate that one. And I stood there and said I wasn't smoking. He took a dog's leash to me, and he whipped me, and he kicked me. And that memory stayed with me. And my mother ran into that living room. And she said, Jack, you're going to kill her. And he said, yes, I'm going to kill her. She's no good and never will be any good. And I wasn't let out for the next couple of weeks. I couldn't go outside that door. And I tried to look out that window. My mother said, get away from the window. Yeah, because I was so black and blue, I was so beaten so bad. And that was one of many beatings that I was to take. And that memory stayed with me, and I knew that if I was deported out of this country, he would kill me first and ask questions later. I moved on uptown at this time in my life. Now, I drank everything and anything anybody ever bought me. But when I bought, I drank Ripple. I don't know if you have any Ripple drinkers here tonight. Let me tell you, if you have not got drunk on Ripple, you have definitely missed a trip. It was 37 cents a bottle. It came in a long neck bottle. And I tell you, you never felt cheated when you drank Ripple wine. You got two drunks for the price of one when you drank Ripple. And I used to walk along Catalina Avenue, and I have a paper sack, and I don't consider myself a wino. I guess I would be a winette. And I gave all the cars the finger. I hated the Irish. I could not want to be Irish. I couldn't understand why any one of you would ever want to be Irish. I used to think, why didn't they go to Ireland and live there and find out what it's like? I like being Irish today. I really believe it wasn't for us Irish who could hold AA meetings in a phone booth. You know, you don't have to be Irish in order to be a member. It just helps a lot, you know. My I didn't want anything to do with the Irish, and didn't want anything to do with the Americans, because all they talked about was education, whether they did or they didn't. That's all I heard, and I had no education, so I took the lesser two evils. I started running around with Mexicans. Now, is any Mexican in the room tonight? I like Mexicans. Angie and I were very good friends, and Angie's Mexican. She was here last year, I know. And Angie and I sat down many years ago, and we kind of dissected the two nationalities, and what we came up with, the only difference between the Irish and the Mexicans is that we ate potatoes and they ate beans. They drink hard, love hard, and beat the hell out of you on Saturday night, whether you need it or not. And so I got involved with a group of Mexicans over there in Torrance La Mita, and I left these people, and I was on my own. I started taking geographicals, as they're called here in Alcoholics Anonymous. You'd start taking little, going to different places. You know, the only problem I had with going to different places, I always brought me with me. If I could have left me home, we would have had a good time. Yeah, so I got involved with this group of Mexicans. They call me Annie the Irish Mexican. I learned to speak Spanish like as a native to their tongue, except it was all swear words. He drank in the mornings, and I was only drinking in the afternoon. He introduced me to the morning drink, and it was very, very, a lot of fun times. It was very exciting. It was, the only time you ever see a Mexican going fast is when the police are chasing them, you know. They really go fast, and jumping out of cars and getting beat up. It was really exciting, and I got to thinking one day, I was living in Gardena at the time, and I got to thinking that this guy ought to marry me. We'd been messing around long enough, and it's time that we got married. It took a half a gallon of Red Mountain wine, took up the courage. Alcohol gave me a tremendous amount of courage. It took away those fears that I had. I had terrible fears, but when I drank, it gave me a lot of courage, and it kind of kept those fears down. And I hitchhiked a ride over to Torrance La Mita, and I found him, and I proposed to him. And you know, he laughed at me. And I don't know how you deal with resentments or how you deal with someone rejecting you. My next thought was, you son of a bitch, I want to kill you. One less Mexican in this world, we'll all be better off. And you see, I know that I am capable of anything when I'm under the influence of alcohol. I also know that I'm capable. Without alcohol, if I am just dry and I don't have a spiritual life going for me, I know that too. I've had to learn that here in Alcoholics Anonymous. I ended up that day, I got him in the car, and I got pictures of this car, and I took him on the Harbor Freeway, and I took 25 feet of guardrail and went down 30 feet in the embankment, and I thought I killed me a Mexican. I ended up in the hospital. I ended up with priests coming, and this is when my drinking really started to take the toll. And those people came down off that hill to see me because I was hemorrhaging, and they thought I was going to die. I was 19 years of age and wanted to die. More than anything, I wanted to die. Life was too hard. Sometimes life gets hard today, but I've caught on to this thing called living here with you because you've taught me how to live. And this priest came to me, and he gave me the last rites because he didn't think I was going to make it through the night because there was other stuff going on that was happening that shouldn't have been happening but was happening. And because of that guilt and that horror and that background where I came from, and they had packed me, and he came in and he gave me his rosary. He gave me the last rites, and he gave me his rosary, and he said, Annie, he said, Shirley, and I had gone to this priest for counseling at St. Lawrence's Church in Torrance, and he said, Shirley, he said, if you die tonight, he said, you will burn in the fires of hell. Do you know what that feels like to a 19-year-old child? You know? And I picked that rosary up, and I kind of threw it at him, and I said, you take your rosary, you take your God, you get the hell out of my life. Because if there is such a place called hell, I'm living it. I'm living it right here. And you know, that was the beginning towards the end for me, because things did not get better. They continued to get worse. I could not get away from this and the obsession of this relationship. I ended up in Phoenix, Arizona, and I thought if I would kill him, then it would make it different. If someone would kill me, it would make it different. I never had a relationship without somebody hitting me or me hitting them. It was always very, very highly abusive. I didn't understand if you didn't hit me, you didn't love me. I had so many twists. I was so twisted in my mind. It talks about that mental twist in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I used to think when I was new that I would get that mental twist untwisted and I would be on my way. I hate to tell you, I've got a lot of bends. I'm going to be here for a long time. I ended up on down on Anaheim Street. I ended up in Long Beach one night, and I don't know what normal is. The only place I ever get, the people I run around with, maybe you people have normal friends here in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't. Most of my friends in AA are not normal. The only place I ever get to see normal is on my washer and dryer. It says normal cycle. Okay. I decided to call the cops on this guy, and I ran out to the phone booth to call the cops on him, and he kicked the door, and he kicked me, and I yelled, "Uncle." Now, I have to believe that my oldest daughter is normal. She is not an alcoholic. She's got her little quirks. I'm glad that she's married, and her husband will probably have to put her with a psychiatrist 10 years from now, but, you know, that's okay, because she happens to be my daughter. She's normal. She's normal. She thinks fairly rational. I don't know what that is. So I go back into the bar and I said, "Let's have a drink and we'll discuss this. You know, let's take care of this, because I can't stand for somebody to abandon me. I can't stand the feeling of abandonment. I can't stand to think that I don't care what you do to me, don't leave me." Now, I've had to learn that in Alcoholics Anonymous. There's been people that have had to go on to do different things, and I don't suffer from that feeling of abandonment today because of AA and because of the program. And I ended up in Arizona with this guy, and I ended up getting drunk and belligerent and saying things I shouldn't have said. There was another little quirk in me. Every time I got hit, I wanted somebody to hit me hard enough to kill that part of me that kept screwing up. Now, I don't know if you understand that, but that's the way I thought. If you would just hit me hard enough, you would kill that part of me that kept screwing up. And you know, I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous that if you kill that part of me, you kill all of me, because that's the part of me you love here in Alcoholics Anonymous. But it talks about me in step 8, about bringing out the finer character defects in other people. Boy, I was good at that. I was good at it. I can still do it today in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'll agitate you, agitate you. I watch some of the guys, newcomers, at some of the meetings I go to, and the hair kind of stands when I get into that mode. I try not to do it today because I value my life today. I don't want to get killed. I like living. And I ended up agitating, trying to get this guy to kill me. But I ended up in Arizona, and I almost got that wish. And I got drunk and got belligerent and went out to the back seat of a car to pass out, and 4 Mexican guys came out. I don't know what I said to this woman, but I said something to this guy's wife that I should not have said. And they took me out of the backseat of the car, and they worked me over good. And this guy said, "We'll go get the truck." And they were talking in Spanish. And they go get the truck, and I got these 3 other guys got me down in this dirt road. And this truck came, and these 3 guys jumped off of me. I don't know, 28 and a half years later, where I got the sense to roll off of that dirt road. But I rolled off of that dirt road, and that truck went past me, and I got up off of that dirt road. And I'm the type of drunk, I live by 4 mailboxes, a Ralph's Market or some sign, and I'm in Arizona somewhere, and I'm never going to get back to California. How am I going to get back to California? And my hair is full of gravel, my face looks like that truck has run over it, and I need a drink. I need a drink, not a drink, I need a lot of drink. And I walk along that dirt road, and the guy comes along, and he picks me up. And we go to a liquor store, and we go to a dirty motel, and that's how I learned to solve my problems. I have no idea how to solve my problems until I come to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I came to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, I heard a great deal of dying. I know what it's like to die. I know what it's like to die when you're out there drinking, and I know what it's like to die when you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous, and you get to that part and it says you have to let go of all your old ideas. My God, I just couldn't hardly breathe when they get to that point. I think, I can't let go of all my old ideas. I will literally die if I let go of all my old ideas. The only old idea I could let go of was the old idea that I could drink. I didn't know what all of my old ideas were. And I am so grateful to the people in Alcoholics Anonymous at that time that knew how far down that scale I had gone and knew that they would have to spoon feed me, Alcoholics Anonymous, a little at a time. I ended up in this little room over in Gardena, and I died 1,000 times in this little room. I couldn't even come up with the $10 to pay for this room. And I'd be sneaking up the stairs, and I had to go down the hall to take a shower, and I'd be so full of fear, and I'd start drinking to get up the courage to go down the hall to take a shower. And I'd always overshoot the mark. I never got down the hall to take a shower. And I remember lying in the bed one night, and I was screaming like a banshee. I wanted somebody to understand me, one lousy person to understand me. I couldn't hold on to boyfriends. I couldn't hold on to girlfriends. And I remember getting out of that bed and putting on those old rubber go-aheads and that old T-shirt and heading out on Western Avenue. And I always found somebody for a very brief time, and it always ended up the same way. I got beat up and thrown and left to my own self. I want you to know, if you're new here tonight, that I have been understood beyond understanding in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have been loved beyond anything that I ever dreamed of in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I ended up in Anaheim Street in Long Beach, and I did about 8 months in Anaheim Street. It's not a really nice place to come from. You know, I think Deborah knows where that is, as people know they're here. Yeah, I did 8 months down there, and I don't think I could have done any more. And while I was down there, I met this skinny, puny little guy, and he wanted to date me. Now, you could smell me long before you could see me, but he wanted to date me. And I asked him if he had a job, and he said, no, he didn't work. And I said, well, my God, I can't afford to take care of you. You're going to have to get a job. And he got himself a job, and him and I got together, and he gave me two black eyes, and I knew that we were in love. It's my daughter's father, and we got married 6 weeks later, and he was going to take care of me, and we went back to Minnesota, and he started telling me he wanted me to cook for him, and I thought, my God, I married you. What more do you want? You know? And he started, you know, taking bottles out of my purse and telling me I couldn't drink, and I thought, I met his mother and father, were beautiful people, and I thought, my, I should have checked this guy out a little further. I said, you know, his mother didn't drink, she didn't smoke, she didn't gossip, went to church on Sunday, and she didn't screw around. I had absolutely nothing in common with her. And I thought, my God, I've got to get back out of this. How do I get out of this? And I decided 5 months into this marriage that we had to get back to California, that I'd made a terrible mistake. I wanted to go back and find that Mexican that really loved me. And I got one of those brainstorms that what someone had told me, that if you have a baby, you will automatically grow up. And I decided to get pregnant, and this is what I got. I decided to get pregnant, and 5 minutes after I'm pregnant, I don't want to be pregnant anymore. And the doctor gave me beer and wine. I just have one glass of wine a day and one beer a day, and I was having a six-pack and a half a gallon, and I spent that 9 months by the toilet bowl. And you know, she gets shocked when she hears this stuff, and, you know, she brought her son down to me when I had cancer a year ago, November, and she brought the baby down and take care of me, and she said, well, Mom, she said, do you think Patrick will miss his daddy and will this affect him? And I kind of looked at her and I said, oh, honey, I said, it didn't affect you at one bit. I took you to Vegas when you were 6 months old, and I don't even remember how I got there. You know, she kind of looked at me. She got those big brown eyes. I said, Mom! But she's so scared to drink, it's not even funny. It's a good way to have her. So I had that baby girl, and I wanted to be a good mommy, Audrey. I really did. And I make my amends to you every time I get to a podium of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I took that baby home. You know, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, for those of you who are mothers, that you cannot transmit something you don't have. And I couldn't give to that child what I didn't have. I didn't have it. It wasn't given to me. And you know where I got it? I got it from the other women here in Alcoholics Anonymous. The women here in Alcoholics Anonymous, the Mary Bannocks and the Dorothy Patricks and the Lois Browns and the Carolins and the Angies. And they nurtured me. They mothered me. I, in turn, learned how to mother and nurture my children. I couldn't do that for her. And I wanted to. I very quickly got into abuse, very quickly started to abuse her. And many nights that man had to take me off of her. And then I would run away. I couldn't. I had such a restless. My disease was so rampant. And I couldn't accept anything good in my life. And I'd have to head out in those streets and head back down to Long Beach. And I'd take off, and I'd be gone 10 days at a time. And I'd come home, and I would tell him, if you straighten up and fly right, it would be different, because it was his fault. Because I couldn't take responsibility. And he told me that he was going to take her. He's going to leave me and he's going to go back to Minnesota. Now, I didn't know how to do it, but I didn't want him to take her either. So I came to you and I looked around and I left. And then 8 months later, I came back. And on that Sunday morning, she stood at the end of a table, at the end of a couch where her diaper's half off and the little legs all black and blue and those big eyes that she's got today, just kind of sunken in her head. And her daddy sat at the other end of the couch, wringing his hands with his head hanging down. And I said, I was a mess. And I said, I'm going to call that girl that wants to be my friend. And he said, you go right ahead, Annie. He said, you've never completed anything in your life and you won't stay there either. And I called Carolyn and she came and got me on June 16th and took me to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I can't begin to tell you what you've done for me. I can't begin to thank you enough for being there for me, for all the trials and all the tribulations. I'd like to tell you that I walked in here and it all changed and I became a real good person. And I'd be lying to you through my teeth. I didn't come here because I was a bad person. I came here because I was a very sick person from alcoholism. I came in here and my first 9 months, I was 9 months sober, 9 months pregnant, and I gave birth to a baby boy. And now I'm sober, and now I want to be a really good mom because I'm sober, and you're supposed to be a good mom when you're sober. And I took that on, and I have had our trials and tribulations, but I've grown up with my kids. And I abused him, and I abused her, and I abused my husband. And I paced, and the only time I was okay was for 1.5 hours. I'd come to you, and I'd sit in meetings, and I'd tell you what was going on. And I will not stand up here and tell you that I was not walking the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was walking the steps with everything I had. It wasn't much, but it was everything I had. I got pregnant again, and I found out what causes it, but I got 3 children, and... And I'm not giving it up, and I don't care if you tell me it's a character defect. I'm not giving it up. My youngest daughter is 26 years old, and I never laid a hand on her, and I probably should have. She's given me more trouble than the other two. She's a great kid. She's very educated, and she reminds me of me, except she's got an education that's more scary. She's got all at the predisposition of our disease. She doesn't like when she hears me say that about her, but I watch it and I see it, and she doesn't hang real well. And how she got through school is, I don't know. My kids are very educated, and I'm really proud of them because those are things that I wanted them to have and felt they should have. Audrey's a graduate from USC, and she married a doctor. You know, can't get any better than that. And he's a nice man, and he's good to her, and he'll be able to afford that good psychiatrist for her later on down the road. It's very, very important. I kind of remind him of that every chance I get. I was 5 years sober, and I was 2.5 years sober, and I beat my son. And I don't tell you this again because I'm proud of him. I tell you this because if you're new and you're a woman in Alcoholics Anonymous, and you come in here and you come from the places I came from, you're not going to get well overnight. And you have to allow these women in Alcoholics Anonymous to love you and nurture you so that you can love and nurture your children. I love my children very, very much. I'd do anything for my children today. But I couldn't give them anything I didn't have here. And I beat my son, and I beat him till his eyes rolled back in his head. And a man came to the door. He took that baby away from me. And I stood there. And he said, you called somebody. And I called Mary Lee. And Mary Lee came and got me and took me to a meeting. And I went into the meeting, and it talks about the promises in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you promised me. You promised me when I came here that I would intuitively know how to handle situations to baffle me. You promised me that I had a peace of mind. You promised me that I'd have freedom, and I had no freedom. I am worse off now than I was when I came to you. If in case you're wondering why I have to find it so necessary to tell you my story tonight, is because I want to get a clear picture of where I'm coming from because of what's going on in my life. And because I want you to know that I am so overpaid. I
am overpaid in Alcoholics Anonymous. I left that went in that meeting and I said, somebody help me. Please help me make that 180-degree turn. Help me surrender to that power that you talk about here in Alcoholics Anonymous. Help me to stop fighting. You know, fight. I couldn't stop fighting. And somebody said something and I threw a chair down in a meeting. And I ran out of that meeting and a lady came out after me. Her name was Edna and she grabbed a hold of me. I couldn't cry when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I could not cry. A guy held me one night while another one punched my face and I told him to go ahead and kill me because I was never going to cry again. And there was a guy in my whole group, his name was Walt Stiles, and every time Walt got to a podium of Alcoholics Anonymous, he would cry. And I used to sit out there and I'd white knuckle and the hair would stand on my neck and I'd say, why does he cry? I know today why Walt cried. Cried because he was so full of gratitude. He cried because he was so grateful that he had found this fellowship called Alcoholics Anonymous. That night when I lay in that woman's arms and I cried, I thought there would be nothing left of me. That I would just be a big blob of jelly, because to what crying to me was such a sign of weakness. And what I found is that tears are the cleansing of your soul. And my tears were the cleansing of my soul, and my soul needs to be cleansed. And that woman that gave me life in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous goes on and talks about after we do these things that some of us have felt that we were reborn. I was reborn that night. And that woman's name was Edna, and Edna had 9 years sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. And Edna committed suicide 3 months after she gave me life. She took me to Orange County, and I'm not here to give you a plug for psychiatrists, but I ended up her psychologist for the next 2.5 years. And those old timers in those days when I got sober were not into psychologists or into any kind of stuff. You worked the steps, and that was it. Well, they were so grateful that I was going to. They kept encouraging me, kept saying, you keep going there, you need help, because they were taking me to Schizophrenics Anonymous, you know. And through that man, I got in touch with that power that resides in each and every one of us. I got in touch with that power within me, deep within my own soul, and I found my higher power. My life has never been the same since. And I started to reach to my children. I started to touch my children. And I love my children very, very much. I love my son, and I love my oldest daughter, and I love my youngest daughter. And I could not feel love for anybody. And I had those three kids, and a gal came into program, and her name was Cindy, and there was another gal named Diane G, and they asked me to be her sponsor. I was 5 years sober. Nobody had ever asked me to be their sponsor. The old timers used to make those newcomers move them away from me. They were afraid I was going to contaminate those new people. They'd say, just move over here. Annie's not well. You know? And Cindy asked me, and I said I would. And Cindy was one of these that used a lot of drugs and a lot of LSD. And she used to sit in meetings with her legs wrapped around her neck. She had long blonde hair. In fact, Audrey used to imitate her when she came to the house. She had damaged her knees so bad, she used to walk on her toes. And when she was a little girl, Audrey would walk on her toes behind Cindy, imitating her. And my other daughter used to imitate the other. They all imitated the people that come to the house. The youngest one used to imitate Judy because she smoked, and she'd sit there with the fingers, you know, pretending she was smoking. You know, we're all role models for everybody. But Cindy asked me to be her sponsor, and like I said, she ended up, she used to sit with her legs wrapped around, and one night she came into a meeting, she was sitting by the door, and I went up to the table, to the head table, and I was talking to the secretary, and this guy came up to me, and he said, Cindy's over there, and she's hallucinating. She was 6 weeks clean and sober, and he said, you're her sponsor, aren't you? And I said, yes, and I was scared to death. And I walked across that room, and I went over to her, and I undid her legs, and I took her into the bathroom. And I sat on the floor, and I held her in my arms, and I rocked her like a baby. And she looked at me with the bluest eyes I've ever seen in anybody. And she said, Annie, you love me so much. And the hair stood in my arms, and I started to cry. And I felt love for the first time for another human being. I had three children, and I didn't feel that kind of love. And I love my kids very much. And I looked at her, and I said, my God, yes, I do. And I believe that it's not so much what I can give you as what God wants me to learn through you. And I've learned a lot through you. Yeah, I want to tell you what's going on in my life. I was diagnosed with cancer a year ago, November. And I had modified radical surgery, and I really believed that it was all done. And I did chemo, and I went through all of that, and I didn't do it alone.
I did it with the help of the steps and the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. You carried me. And I went into the hospital, and I was starting reconstruction in August. And I went in January 21st of this year, and I've got cancer again. I took part of it out, and I've got two tumors in my nodes, and they can't operate. And you know, I'm just being carried. I think about that poem on Footprints, and I feel the power of prayer. I'm not afraid of dying. I'm just not ready to, you know. And I don't believe I will die from this, but I don't want to have to go through it. It's part of me, this little kid in me that kind of runs around. And when I was new in Alcoholics Anonymous, I kept wanting somebody to do it for me. You do it. I can't. And you told me that I had to do it, and I did it. And I'm glad I've worked my own steps, and I tailor-made a program that fits me and it won't fit anybody else here. And I know I can do this, and I know I can do it with the strength and the prayers of everybody here in this room, and that I will come through this. I start my therapy, chemotherapy, and take a look at my hair. I ain't going to have any in a couple of weeks. And I told my daughter I'm going to come up and leave, not my heart in San Francisco, and leave my hair there. So God has been good to me, and so have you. I love Alcoholics Anonymous more than anything in my life. I've grown up here. You've been part of all my life. You've been part of it the last 28 years. My kids have grown up here in fellowship. I divorced that man after 26 years. I tried everything to try and get him to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. Whether he be an alcoholic or not, his drinking became a very big problem to me, and it became very disturbing that I got to a place in my life where I wanted to commit suicide, and I got very, very depressed, and it was time for me to move on, and I didn't want to move on, but I moved on, and I believe that God has a plan for everybody, and he has a plan for me too. I read a lot today, and I like to read Gibran, and I like to close with this. And Gibran says, "Do our children come through us? They're not of us. My children came through me. They're not of me. I can no more get into their world than they can get into my world. I came through the people I came through, but I'm not of those people I came through. I'm of the people of Alcoholics Anonymous. You are the people. You're the ones that walked the extra mile with me when nobody else would walk with me. You're the ones that sat and held my hand when nobody else would sit and hold my hand. You're the ones that seen an Annie that nobody else could possibly see. And she walks tall with dignity today because she is a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to thank you so much for the last 28 years of my life. God bless each and every one of you."